Good morning again to everybody, please be seated. Our 1130 case is case number 61946, Ralph Torres versus State, Mr. Castillo for the appellant, and Mr. Salinger, Mr. Van Dyke for the, excuse me, Mr. Salinger for the appellant, and Mr. Van Dyke for the respondent.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Adam Salinger, and myself, along with my co-counsel, Mr. Michael Castillo, have the distinct pleasure of representing Mr. Ralph Torres in this matter as it's been remanded back from the United States Supreme Court. I'd like to reserve approximately 5 minutes for rebuttal. Moving on, the scope of this remand, in our opinion, is very limited. Specifically, the United States Supreme Court never once addressed the ID retention issue because that just wasn't present in that case on the street. In that case, they decided whether or not to apply the Brown factors absent some kind of voluntary, consensual act on behalf of the defendant in order to attenuate the taint, so to speak. And so in our mind, the ID retention issue is off the table as it's already been decided. So I'd like to briefly discuss the factors that this court looks at for when it decides whether or not to reconsider an issue that's already been previously decided, and then I'll move on to the attenuation doctrine, paying specific attention to that third factor, with particularity to the purpose and flagrancy of the police misconduct. Looking at the factors for reconsideration, there are that there is substantially new or different evidence, that there's an intervening change in controlling law, or that the prior decision is clearly erroneous and would result in manifest injustice. Here, there's been zero evidence that's new or otherwise presented differently. And so, as for the first problem, that's obviously not met. In regards to the intervening change in controlling law, the state wants to cite to Rodriguez, but Rodriguez doesn't stand for the proposition the state would have this court think that it does. Specifically, Rodriguez is about a vehicle stop, period, end stop, bottom line, and what related inquiries are permissible during a vehicle stop. So specifically in Rodriguez, an officer pulled over Mr. Rodriguez and went through all the traffic-related inquiries, and at the very end asked him, can I use my drug dog to sniff around your car? Rodriguez said no. And at that point, the officer detained him for an additional 7 or 8 minutes, approximately, in order to effectuate the drug dog sniff. Now, the lower courts in those cases held that that was a de minimis extension of the stop and was therefore permissible. However, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed on those grounds and said there is no such thing as de minimis. The moment your reasonable suspicion ends and or the purposes of the traffic stop are effectuated, that's the end of the stop. If you want to move into those inquiries, they cannot prolong the detention. And so, quite frankly, I'm not sure why that case in any way, shape, or form helps the state. Because what it states, in its most basic terms, is the moment the purpose of the stop has been effectuated, the stop is done. You don't get to keep investigating. And so, to draw the analogy here, the moment an ID was presented that indicated that no status offense had taken place, that's the end of the stop here. Now, the state has conceded that there's been no curfew violation allegation, because in the joint appendix, specifically on the motion to suppress hearing, the officer conceded that once he came up to Ralph, he realized he was at least over 18. It was just a question of whether or not he was over 21. And so then it became an issue of whether or not he was old enough to drink, which obviously his identification card would show. And so when we look at the prior decision being clearly erroneous and would result in manifest injustice, as far as I can see in the state's brief, they've never once presented any argument that it was clearly erroneous or that it would be based on manifest injustice. Specifically, I think our brief does a good job differentiating the cases that the state cites to. Specifically, the Clouty case, it was a 1983 case. There was a suspicion of the warrant because he was a college-age kid that was refusing to get his ID, so this officer started developing independent, reasonable suspicion to insist on seeing an ID and running it to see if there's a warrant, because in that officer's mind, the only reason somebody who's old enough to drink doesn't give you an ID is because they're trying to hide something else. In the Osborne case, that one was a very fact-specific inquiry by the Ninth Circuit, and specifically, the son had told his parents in this case, you don't know who you're messing with, I'm going to have somebody come kill you. And sure enough, when the officers are taking that report, one of Osborne's, I guess Osborne himself, shows up and they're trying to ascertain who this person is he a danger, is he a threat? And so that's obviously different. With Soto Cervantes, with the fake alien ID registration cards, the prosecutor in that case went to great lengths to substantiate his record and demonstrate that there's just this mass proliferation of these fake ID cards, which was a step not taken. That, you know, one officer's testimony that he often gets fake IDs is not sufficient. How often does he get fake IDs? How often when he runs them does he get them? And so that doesn't stand for that proposition either. And then finally with Hutchinson from the DC Circuit, that was more about their internal background check database. And not only that, a subsequent case, Ramsey versus United States, it's cited in our brief, also stands for the proposition that once the cause for the reasonable suspicion of the stop ends, that the stop must end. You can't conduct these other unrelated inquiries. And so quite frankly, the ID retention issue is closed and done. Although the U.S. Supreme Court vacated this court's prior opinion and remanded, they remanded for proceedings consistent with their opinion. And in the defense, in the appellant's mind, you know, there's just no reason to reconsider it because it wasn't touched there. This court got the decision right in the first instance, and there's not been this mass briefing issue that the state seems to think would persuade this court otherwise. And specifically, Rodriguez changes nothing, which we'll address shortly in the attenuation. So turning to the attenuation issue, obviously the misconduct of this court still holds that there was misconduct in the proximity way in favor of suppression. That's as much conceded by both parties. Same thing with the intervening circumstance in light of the U.S. Supreme Court opinion. The intervening arrest warrant acts as a cause to kind of break the taint, so to speak. And so really the meat and potatoes of this case and what we're focusing on is, you know, that third prong of Brown, where Justice Blackmun, quoting it, said, particularly, which is something the test is looking for, particularly the purpose and flagrancy of the alleged misconduct. And so when we look at Brown, the officers conceded as much that their purpose in interrogating him and investigating was to investigate things. They wanted him to make an admission. They wanted him to essentially make himself culpable. Same thing here, where the officer's intention in running this ID is to check for other warrants and or to check for some kind of obstruction of justice by presenting a false identification to a police officer. That's his purpose. He's trying to find evidence of other crimes and he's trying to fish for things. As far as the flagrancy, the joint appendix, which is I believe page 7, and it would be the initial prelim transcript, page 8, towards about the middle there, would show that the officer said that it's routine that he runs the ID for everyone he contacts. Now, he never defines what a contact is, but that's his pattern and practice. So when we're looking at things like flagrancy, what can be more flagrant than purposely doing this to everyone that you come into contact? And I think that's a distinguishing factor between the case at bar here and Street, where Justice Thomas's opinion was concerned saying, well, this was a one-time isolated mistake. This officer wasn't sure what he was, you know, he thought that he might have had reasonable suspicion. And I think the subtext of the Street opinion is that Justice Thomas would have found reasonable suspicion because he keeps making the disclaimer throughout the opinion. We assume without deciding that reasonable suspicion was absent here because the party stipulated as such, right? And so when we look at it, they're saying that in the flagrancy aspect that this was an isolated mistake that most used negligent. Here, this officer is apparently doing it to everyone. He's running wants and warrants checks on everyone. And so I've kind of nicknamed this idea, this show me your papers. Can anyone now stop you on the street, demand to see your identification, absent, you know, any reasonable suspicion? If they happen to find a warrant, great. If not, you go on your way, you have a possible 1983 action for about a 5-minute unlawful detention, which is going to be hard to get damages on. And so the petitioner just finds great fault with the remedies suggested by the U.S. Supreme Court, especially where these cases are factually distinct, primarily being he does this in every case. This wasn't a one-time Mr. Streif. This is, I do this routinely. This is my pattern and practice. And so when we look at Rodriguez once again, that's not the case that the state would have it be, because in the context of a vehicle stop, there's other inquiries like safe driving and things like that that have to be inquired into.
Well, then don't you come full circle back to your original point that we do need to look at whether or not running a wants and warrants on an ID is appropriate.
Right.
I mean, that's where you end up if you're putting that back into the analysis.
And I guess I'm mostly just trying to distinguish Rodriguez from here, because Rodriguez, there's certain other traffic-related things that somebody's operating their vehicle safely, that they don't have wants and warrants because otherwise they're out on the highway, that aren't present for somebody walking down a bridge and staggering a little bit in Elko just after midnight. There's not that same safety concern, especially when it was not articulated here. And so as far as this wants and warrants check...
Well, regardless of whether it's at the front end of the analysis or part of the flagrancy analysis, it begs the question, should there be a reason for an officer to pursue a warrants check? I assume you would concede that if there are obvious reasons in the facts where the ID is fake, or if the officer were to testify by way of example that I have learned through my training that the Nevada Criminal History Repository has significant backlogs in its posting of existing convictions, which causes me to inquire about someone's warrant status. At least those explanations would probably be a reasonable basis for pursuing the ID.
Absolutely. If there was some kind of reasonable basis, like in Kaluk with the college kid purposely being evasive, or if the ID itself seemed deficient on its face or obviously fraudulent, but the officer here never articulated anything other than this is my pattern and practice in every case.
And based on his testimony that he couldn't recall the specifics of this case, but that this was an enforcement of his routine practice, sending this back for further factual development doesn't seem to be productive.
Correct.
You have about 3 minutes and 25 seconds.
Thank you.
Mr. Van Dyke, for the state of Nevada.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, Lawrence Van Dyke on behalf of the state of Nevada. I do want to, especially in light of the reply briefing, kind of start by pointing out what the state is not arguing in this case. But I think there's been a little bit of a, I want to clear the air about what we're not saying. A few things. One is the state is not making the argument, obviously, that officers can detain everyone that they contact and run their ID. That's not the state's position. And in fact, we're not even saying that that the officer is doing a legitimate Terry stop, so supported by reasonable suspicion, that in every single Terry stop, an officer can run an ID. Although I will point out that I do think that the cases that we've provided to the court in supplemental briefing do indicate that that is the sort of majority position of most of the jurisdictions we provided. But we're not even arguing that. But we're arguing, and I want to make this clear off the bat, but we're arguing the legal position that we're arguing for in this case is that where there's reasonable suspicion of a crime, which there was here, and the legitimate scope of the inquiry to negate that reasonable suspicion involves, quote unquote, checking an ID. But included within checking that ID should include the ability to make sure that ID is valid so that when you
but
check
don't
it,
you need some type of reasonable suspicion or to support probable cause to go further than checking the ID and verifying that your initial concern over the stop isn't there? I mean, what gave this officer any indication that the ID may be fake?
He didn't have.
Didn't say anything about it.
There was no specific. There was no specific or particularized concern about this particular ID. We agree that it's a generalized concern, just like it was a generalized concern in the Clock case, which is why we cite that, just as it was a generalized concern in every single one of those 18 cases that we cite that involves. And so our position is not that you need, I mean, that's where we think that, and where you don't need to have specific concern. But I want to make clear, we're not talking about in necessarily every stop. We're talking about a stop where you're going to rely on the information that's on the face of the ID. You know, here the age.
But let's back up. In this particular case, the suspicion was basically being intoxicated and underage. So he stops. They do that. They want to verify that he's of age. The question is answered. Why do we go any further? What does that mean?
So implicit in that, Your Honor, and implicit in what's been said here this morning, and implicit, I think, in this court's former decision, is that looking at the ID dispels the suspicion. I think what this court did in the previous decision, as
it hasn't... Isn't it not pretext when you want to go further than your initial suspicion was as to alcohol and age, not crime, other than possibly being a little inebriated in public, but that seemed to be answered very quickly.
Yeah.
So why do we get any further? Why is it, why do we infringe on the person's right to freely travel, freely proceed?
So, Your Honor, I think as a factual matter, the record is clear in this case that the officer's personal suspicion was not alleviated by simply looking at the ID or by looking at the person. To be clear, I think we've already heard that from the other side this morning, that looking at Torres, he said, I think I could tell that it looked like he was over 18, but I couldn't tell if he was over 21. So then he got the ID, and his personal suspicion that he may be underage wasn't alleviated by looking at the ID because he wasn't sure if the ID was proper. Not because he thought that ID was fake, but because he, as he testified, I get a lot of fake IDs. And to be clear, that's exactly the same circumstances in Soto Cervantes, where he said, I knew that a lot of the immigration cards were fake. I didn't know if this one was fake, but I knew that a lot of them were fake.
But he wasn't presented with an immigration card.
He was presented with an out-of-state identification card. And he wasn't even presented with a Nevada driver's license or a Nevada identification card.
If he had a passport, that would have been out-of-state. We have all these documents. So why are we, in essence, it appears in the parlance to be a duck. It walks like a duck. It's a pretextual stop. And we are going further than our initial base. We keep manufacturing new evidence to go to the next step. But why should that be acceptable?
Your Honor, because this court, I agree with you. I think this court's previous decision was based on the fact that this court, it doesn't say that in the decision, to be clear, but this court thought it was a pretextual stop and sort of therefore reached a certain conclusion. But if we back away from that and we simply ask the question, if you have reasonable suspicion to stop somebody, and we have that here, and that reasonable suspicion involves an age-related offense that you're going to rely on the ID, or it could be an immigration-related offense, I suppose. That's why the Soto Cervantes. But something where you're going to rely on an ID. Then basically what this court's decision does, which I don't think any other court has ever done before, is this court's decision, this previous decision says, you know what, you just got to take that ID at face value. Unless you can tell something's fake on that ID, unless you can articulate reasonable suspicion about that specific ID, you have to take that at face value. And I don't know, Your Honor, and they certainly have not cited any. I don't know any case from any jurisdiction that says that. All the cases say, you know what, if you have reasonable suspicion to get the ID and check it, the Osborne case that they talk about, I think it's important to note the Ninth Circuit, which is a pretty defendant-friendly circuit. The Ninth Circuit said, remember, the Osborne case was a Las Vegas Metro case, and the Ninth Circuit in that case said, after recounting that the police officers there had asked for the ID and ran it, they said, they didn't say he ran it because of the reason that they said this morning, or they said in their reply brief. They said they ran it because the Metro officer, quote, testified that this type of inquiry is common police procedure when an officer makes contact with someone. In other words, when officers think in Nevada, whether they're in Las Vegas, whether they're in Elko, and I know they think this nationwide, when they have reasonable suspicion to merit getting an ID and checking that ID, that reasonable suspicion extends to running it. They think that, and I guess that goes, that's why I was, Justice Harris and Justice Pickering, I think this does relate to the...
But it begs the question, you're saying they have created their own law that they have a right to go further. What gives them that inherent right?
Because
that's what I'm putting out there.
But I don't think that they think they're going further because as a factual matter, and this is important, as a factual matter, Officer Shelley's reasonable suspicion was not alleviated by seeing the ID because he doubts ID.
Why was it not?
The same reason that the Osborne case, the Metro officer was not alleviated when he saw the guy's Nevada ID. He ran it because they get a lot of fake. For the same reason that in the Klein case, you know.
Well, how is that different from a rule that any time they're motivated to check an ID, they're entitled to verify by warrants and warrant search? I mean, you're saying you're not making that argument, but aren't you really?
I actually think, two answers to your question, Your Honor. One of them is I think the warrant question has been decided by the Strike case, and I'll get to that in a second. So I think the warrant, but as to the ID validity question, which they kind of end up at the same place, but the ID validity, I want to make really clear what we are arguing. What we're saying is if you have reasonable suspicion of a crime, And your reasonable suspicion can be negated or somehow taken away by the information on an ID. Then an officer doesn't need to just say, you know what, I'm not an expert in telling whether an out-of-state ID is fake or not. I still have to rely on this because I can't, you know, in the heat of the moment, I can't tell whether or not this is fake. In that instance, I think an officer should be able to run the ID. The officers all think they can do that.
And your point is you don't need to argue further than that in this case, even though the implication of your argument is if it's a legitimate request to look at the ID in the first place, I can't imagine why they'd be looking at it if they weren't.
Well, but to be clear, I think officers can ask for IDs in lots of circumstances that don't relate to the information on the face of the ID other than the person's identity. So I'm talking about a smaller subset of cases like this, which would be mostly age-related crimes, which is going to be mostly my underage drinking, to be honest. And so in those particular cases, like the Clark case says, the First Circuit in the Clark case says, they said, listen, especially when you're investigating age-related crimes, you know you're going to get a lot of fake IDs. I mean, it's basically a matter of judicial notice. You know that fake IDs are out there a lot in the context of age-related crimes. So only, you know, I don't want to limit to only that, but where it's the information that on the face of the ID that is supposed to alleviate the reasonable suspicion for the officer, then I think the officer should have the ability to say, you know what, I don't want to just have to trust this ID, just like in the Soto Cervantes case. I don't know how these IDs, you know, I don't know much about immigration cards, but I'm not just going to trust the information because I know there's a lot of fakes. In the Clark case,
Mr. Van Dyke, I'm sorry.
Yes.
It would be a different case if the officer had said, I thought he was under 21, I got his ID, he still looked under 21 to me. I didn't believe it, and so I ran it. But that's not what we have here. The officer didn't testify to a nexus between searching the ID, checking the ID and the conduct. He said, I checked the ID because, hey, sometimes there's fakes. Not this one's a fake. Not that he looks way too young. So I think that's the nexus that's concerning. It is, and the cases you cite all involve a finding by the court that the interaction was not concluded, that the warrant check was integrated in that. And here, it seems that at least one finding would be that was concluded, and then this is a separate investigation, and that's where we need the extra facts.
So, Your Honor, I went back and read the record for precisely this reason. And when I read the record, there was two different hearings. You know, there's the early hearing, and then there was a follow-on hearing. And that particular question was never asked by either counsel, either side, about, you know, there was a question of why did you run the ID, and you can imagine the officer sitting there on the stand. He says, and in fact, I do want to make something really clear now to make sure this isn't lost on the court. You can't distinguish this case from the Strike case by the fact that the officer runs the ID with everybody that he stops, because in the Strike case, the record was very clear that the officer ran on page 2073. Justice Kagan cites to the record and has made clear that, quote, checking for warrants during a stop is the, quote, normal practice of South Salt Lake City Police. So you can't distinguish this on basic, oh, this was Officer Shelley's ordinary practice. It's Officer Shelley's ordinary practice. It's the Metro Police Officer's ordinary practice, as Osborne says. It was the ordinary practice in Elkville, as Officer Shelley said. And so that's all he was asked, is why did you do it? He said, well, I do it with everyone I contact. Now, also to be clear, he said, well, we don't know what he meant by contact. Well, actually, Torres, his former counsel, later on asked him back to him. He said he did it with everybody he contacted, and Torres' counsel said, well, I do it for everybody that I... She said, you said you do it for everybody you stop. So I think he understood him to mean everybody that I have a Terry stop with, and I get their ID, I run their ID. I want to make clear, I don't see anywhere in this record here, in either one, and I would urge the court to go back and read both of the two, if they're not that long, to read the transcript. But he said he didn't know. The things that are clear from the records, he did not know he was over 21. He said, I knew he was probably over 18, but I didn't know. I'm not a good judge of age, and I couldn't tell if he was over 21. And then he said, well, why did you run the ID? And he said, because I get a lot of fakes. And so the answer there is, I got an ID. Keep in mind, this was not a Nevada ID. This is an out-of-state ID. He gets an ID, and he says, okay, it says 29 on it, but I'm going to go ahead and run the ID and make sure that this ID is actually correct. And he also did it, I think, for warrant reasons. And I do want to point out to the court that I think Strike addressed that. In the Strike case, if you go back and read the Clark case in the First Circuit in 2009 said that the majority opinion in the circuits is that you can, if you have a Terry stop, you can do a warrant check. And the Clark case says, I read it, it says, most circuits have held that an officer does not impermissibly disband the scope of a Terry stop by performing a background warrant check, even where that search is unrelated to the circumstances that initially drew the officer's attention. And obviously this case illustrates why, because the officer doesn't know in a Terry stop by you're dealing with somebody with a criminal history and has a gun in their pocket. But an Osborne case, to be clear, said, was one of the Ninth Circuit was one of the circuits that said you can do a warrant check, which decides this case. Well, you know, there's not a Fourth Amendment violation, even independent of the validity check, if you can do a warrant check. And in Osborne, or Christian, which was talking about the Osborne case, both Ninth Circuit cases, it said reasonable suspicion of criminal activity is request for identification, where the officer has reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, his request for identification and a check for outstanding warrants or previous arrests are all within the scope of an officer's authority. That was the majority position before Strife. But this is what Strife did on page 263. The U.S. Supreme Court said it was, quote, lawful for an officer during a Terry stop to take the, quote, negligibly burdensome safety precaution, end quote, of running a warrant check. And then,
but that's in the middle of the contact. That's not, they've concluded their investigation, and now they're going to hold you, even for a de minimis amount of time, which lawyers say is no good.
We thought about this, Your Honor. The thing about it, I mean, if you're an officer out there, remember, he talks about in his testimony, he's standing there, and Mr. Torres is standing at the other, he still has to go back to Mr. Torres, give him back his, he has to disengage. I mean, a rule that officers have to somehow, you can run the warrant check, but you can't run it once you've looked at the, I just don't know how a rule like that in practice would actually work. I think the Supreme Court's rule, the rule of these circuits, I think it makes a lot more sense. Listen, if you do a Terry stop, you can run a warrant check. But keep in mind, this court, I mean, I think that is a lot of land after Strife, but it was dicta. It is dicta.
Strife's about the exclusionary piece of it.
I think Strife is dicta. That statement of Strife is dicta, but the fact that the majority thought that was the case, I mean, U.S. Supreme Court dicta is pretty powerful dicta, I think.
But Strife didn't say that the search that they did in Strife was okay.
No, in fact, they said it wasn't okay.
Right.
It wasn't okay, but they did say that attenuation applied. And I do want to make one final point before I run out of time, and that is, I just want to stress on attenuation grounds that you can't distinguish Strife by saying, well, but Dr. Shelley does this all the time as a matter of practice. Because what Strife was talking, because that's the same thing was true with the Salt Lake City Police in the Strife case. What Strife was concerned about was systemic, the words in Strife were systemic misconduct or purposeful unlawfulness. That's where an officer is going around doing something the officer knows is unlawful, but persists in doing it anyway. That's not at all what was going on here. And so I don't think the flagrancy factors at all cut in favor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal. You have 3.5 minutes.
So, specifically, Nevada is different from Utah because we have our state statute on point that says what are the confines of a Terry stop, that codification, and that once your reasonable suspicion ends, that's when the stop ends. And so, to liken the state's analogy, it's very similar to a general interdiction stop, which all jurisdictions have generally held that you can't do that. You can have a drunk driving specific checkpoint, but you can't just generally detain everyone on I-80 going through Reno because drug traffickers go on there. And so when we set up this proposition that the officers can run anyone's ID and then hold on to it until a wants and warrants check come back, we're coming dangerously close to this dystopian show me your papers type of jurisdiction that I don't think we want to be as a state. And so looking at Soto Cervantes specifically, the state in that case for the prosecution took great pains to establish their record that those alien registration ID cards are typically fake. What we have here is a simple throwaway statement that's not quantified in any way, shape, or form about that he gets often fake IDs. And so what I come back to typically, having to fly between here and Reno, is that the TSA can check my ID in 30 seconds with a flashlight, and that's sufficient for purposes of national security. But on a roadside stop with an officer, they've got to run everything through dispatch personally. I just don't buy it. Strife is also, I think, distinguishable primarily because the suspicion in that case was not dispelled by getting the ID. In that case, it wasn't a status offense case. Instead, what Strife was about is whether or not this officer observed somebody going to a known drug house, but a house they suspected of drug activity due to the anonymous tip and due to his intermittent surveillance, the officers there, of the house, seeing people go in and out of the house at all hours of the day and night and only stay for about 3 or 4 minutes, which in his experience was typical for that. And so, in Strife, he did not observe the individual specifically go into the house or come out. He just saw him come from the vicinity, and then he contacted him afterwards. Running his ID, he was still trying to decide whether or not he had reasonable suspicion to detain him. Here, this ID card was presented. It looked factually valid. He could articulate no reason why he thought it was fake in any way, shape, or form, just that he typically gets them. And I don't think the case law supports the proposition that the state would have it support. And specifically when we
look... Is it a reasonable interpretation of the record as suggested by Mr. Van Dyke that the officer wasn't entirely satisfied with the age over 21 or under 21 and that the further pursuit of the ID was necessary for that purpose?
In candor, I don't think we can trust his later record because we have his initial transcript during the preliminary hearing and then we have his testimony during the motion to suppress. And I think his testimony during that motion to suppress was kind of swayed in some way, shape, or form by the objective. Specifically, if you look at the prelim transcript, Ms. Kilpatrick had asked him if Forrest had taken off running, would you have gone after him? And the answer to that was yes, with regards to whether or not Mr. Torres was detained. And then you see the state attempt to clarify that later during the motion to suppress, where they ask him, it's after the warrants check came back that I would have taken after him. And so I don't think we can rely on his testimony that that's a reasonable interpretation. I think he wasn't sure, and at that point, the doubt should go to the defense where there's no particular reasonable suspicion. So in closing, there's no reason to revisit the ID retention issue. Turning to the Brown factors,
I think you're out of time.
Thank you.
Court thanks Mr. Solinger, Mr. Van Dyke, for your arguments in briefing this matter. This matter will stand submitted. Thank you very much.